This program was made possible by the generous support of the Kauffman Foundation and the California Endowment.
Welcome to today's Healthcare 2008 Presidential Forum. My name is Chip Kahn, and I am president of the Federation of American Hospitals. The Federation is joining with Families USA to organize this healthcare forum. Today we are coming to you from Manchester, New Hampshire. With us today is Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico. As usual, our journalist panel is located in Washington, D.C. It is my pleasure to present to you now Ron Pollack, Executive Director of Families USA, who will introduce today's program. Ron?
Thank you, Chip. Welcome this and good afternoon. This forum is the sixth of a series of presidential forums on health care. This is the first forum, however, where the candidate is not in our Washington studio. We're at WMUR-TV in Manchester, New Hampshire, but our four distinguished journalists are in our studio in Washington, D.C. Healthcare has become the top domestic issue of priority concern by the American public. And it's for that reason that Families USA and the Federation of American Hospitals has co-organized these forums so that we can have a thoughtful discussion about the future direction of healthcare rather than simply 30-second and 60-second sound bites. Before I introduce our very distinguished guest, there are several groups I'd like to thank for their work with respect to these forums. First, McNeil Era Productions, which is producing all of these forums. The Kaiser Family Foundation, which is hosting these forums and which is webcasting these forums. I'd like to thank the funders for these forums, the California Endowment and the Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation. And lastly, I'd like to thank the staff at the Federation of American Hospitals and Families USA, especially Mary Ellen Bereka, who has been coordinating these forums for Families USA. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce a friend, the Governor of New Mexico, Bill Richardson. Governor Richardson obviously has numerous distinctive features and background for national leadership. He served in the House of Representatives. He was the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. He served in the Cabinet, and he's currently governor of the great state of New Mexico. Governor Richardson is also very well qualified to talk about health care. He served in the House on the House Energy and Commerce Committee that has jurisdiction over Medicaid and the state children's health insurance program. As governor, he is in charge of making sure that the programs that are key in terms of healthcare safety nets work for people in the state of New Mexico. And he served on a bipartisan gubernatorial task force about the future of Medicaid. And if I may say, I'm deeply pleased with the tremendous role he played on that task force, because he provided the leadership to stop a proposal that would have block-granted the Medicaid program. So without further ado, I'm now going to turn over the program to our moderator, the chief health correspondent for the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer, Susan Dentzer.
Thank you very much, Ron, and welcome to you, Governor Richardson. We're delighted to be here today in Washington to join you in speaking about this very important topic. I have the pleasure now of introducing my journalistic colleagues who will join me today in questioning you. They are Lori McGinley of the Wall Street Journal, Julie Robner of National Public Radio, and Rick Klein of ABC News. Governor, as you know, by prearrangement with the campaigns of each candidate participating in these forums, we've given each of you the same first question in advance to allow you to deliver a statement at the outset. We'll follow that same approach with the closing question, as I'll say in just a few moments. For the other questions, we've allotted you 2 minutes for each response and 1 minute for a response to a follow-up question. Governor, you have our first question, which is this. Do you believe all Americans should have health insurance coverage? And if you do, and if you're elected president, how will you move toward this goal?
Well, thank you very much to all the sponsors. I absolutely believe that all Americans should have quality, affordable health care. Doesn't matter who you are, whether you're a ditch digger or a CEO, we have to make sure everybody is insured. We have to lower costs for everybody, and we have to improve our health system so everybody gets high-quality care. It's time to get health care right. We have 47 million uninsured Americans. 80% of them are in working families. 16 million are underinsured. They pay in but don't get coverage when they need it. That means millions of hardworking Americans are trying to ignore their illnesses, going without preventive care just because they can't afford it. We have more than 9 million uninsured kids who aren't getting the basic care that they need. And we have a president whose idea of a solution is to veto children's health insurance and expand high-deductible health plans. We spend $2.2 trillion a year on health care. 75% of health spending is on chronic diseases. We need to focus on prevention. We need to treat mental health the same way we should, especially for veterans. $2.2 trillion. I don't have to tell you, we're not getting what we pay for today. There's too much negativity in Washington. We have a federal government that hasn't made a serious effort on health care reform in over a decade. What we need is a president who believes that every American should have access to quality, affordable health care. We need a common sense American solution to this American problem, and we need a system that works. As a governor, I have made health care a top priority. Just last month, I announced my Health Solutions New Mexico to build on the efforts of the last 5 years and bring high-quality, affordable health care to every New Mexican. But the states can't do this alone. My plan, the American Choices Plan, is built on common sense principles. Number one, it covers every American. Number two, it lowers the cost of health care. And three, it improves the quality of care. It builds choice, not bureaucracy. We don't need new taxes. We need to cut bureaucracy and lower costs for everyone. My vision of American health care begins with individual choice and shared responsibility. By the end of my first term, my plan will require that all Americans obtain coverage for themselves and their families. And insurance companies will have to do their part. No more denials of coverage based on pre-existing conditions. You know, if we threw all the uninsured into today's individual market, almost 14 million people would be denied coverage or charged more due to pre-existing conditions, or they would get offered insurance that didn't cover their condition. This is according to the health insurance industry's own calculations. I would rapidly expand coverage through existing models. Americans who like their current coverage can keep it, but many people are getting fewer and fewer choices through their jobs. They may be paying higher deductibles, higher copays, so those who want to change will have new choices. Working families and small businesses will have the same choices as members of Congress. Americans 52 to 64 can buy into Medicare. We'll have a stronger safety net through Medicaid and SCHIP for lower-income children and families. I'm going to guarantee that the VA gets the funding it needs. We have nearly 2 million uninsured veterans. The president should not be cutting off veterans from their health care, not now and not ever, especially not during a war. I'll create a hero's health card that provides veterans with the care they deserve, wherever they need it. No civilian would stand for driving 100 miles just to get basic care. No veteran should do either. We're going to lower health care costs. I believe that we need to drastically shift our focus to prevention. Chronic diseases like heart disease, diabetes, and cancer account for at least 75% of our health care costs. We have got to start taking better care of ourselves as a nation. In New Mexico, I took junk food out of schools. I put physical education back in. We got healthy breakfasts for our kids. I banned smoking in public places. We should do it across the country. I think we need more research funding for breakthrough treatments, and we need more research into comparative effectiveness to understand which treatments work. I know we can get much better value for the $2.2 trillion we spend on health care. The bottom line is Americans can't wait any longer for quality, affordable health care. We need to act now.
Thank you very much, Governor. And just a follow-up question. As you mentioned, you favor a number of proposals that other Democratic candidates also favor, employer and individual mandates, insurance market reforms, an emphasis on prevention, and an emphasis on choices. Is there any major way in which your plan differs from those of other Democratic candidates for president, especially those of Senators Clinton, Obama, and Edwards?
Well, first, with Senator Obama's, my plan is a mandate. It covers everyone, and I believe his leaves about 12 million not covered. Secondly, my Heroes Health Card, I believe, is pretty unique in that what I basically do is I cover every veteran outside of the VA system. They get health care wherever they need it, not just at the VA. Third, I believe that my emphasis on prevention is unique in that I have stronger policies that deal with more research, specific research, more funding for cancer, heart disease, Alzheimer's, stem cell research, autism. I have those specific initiatives like getting rid of junk food in schools, healthy breakfast for every child, plus also an initiative that gives incentives to the private sector if they let their employees work out and take the steps they need to become healthier in addition to the smoking ban. So I would say in those three key areas, my plan is more substantial.
Okay, thank you. We'll take a question now from Lori McGinley of the Wall Street Journal.
Governor, your plan is being attacked from both the left and the right. I'll take the right first. Republican candidates for president say that you and the other Democrats are, in effect, pushing socialized medicine. How do you respond to that?
Well, that's flatly wrong. The Republican plans, by the way, if you check them on websites, they're about two pages long, so their specificity is minimal. In my specific plan, I use the private market. We do put specific conditions on insurance companies, like 85% of their premiums have to go into direct care. There are a number of other initiatives where we try to reduce, for instance, the one-third of health care costs going into administration, bureaucracy, electronic records. My plan is market-based. There is a role for the private sector. There's a stronger role for government. For instance, I lower Medicare to 55, but that is basically going to have costing 25% less for those that enroll compared to private plans. So there is a little bit of a tilt towards the public sector, but in no way is this socialized medicine. This is a plan that I believe enhances coverage. This is a plan that enhances care. In other words, the doctor-patient relationship is substantially restored, while the Republican plans give a greater role to HMOs and insurance companies and the private market and health savings accounts, all that don't even increase coverage, nor do they improve quality, and certainly don't lower cost.
Governor, as a follow-up, some conservatives say that an individual mandate, a requirement that all Americans have insurance, is an unwarranted government intrusion. I wonder what your reaction is to that. And also, can you tell us how would you enforce an individual mandate?
Well, I do have a mandate. And basically, it's a mandate that says there's going to be shared responsibility. That obviously, depending on the size of the company and their ability to pay. They are in a shared responsibility with the employee, with the state, and the federal government. And what I have in my plan is basically a sliding tax credit for small businesses, for individuals that can't afford the high quality care. And my plan also has a number of incentives to create insurance pools to help the small business. Now, again, it is, I believe, an issue of shared responsibility. My plan does not create any new bureaucracy. My plan basically says, if you have a health care plan, citizen, and you're satisfied with it, we're not going to mess with you. We're going to focus on the uninsured, the underinsured, those with pre-existing condition, and we're going to have a shared effort between the private sector, employers, the states, and the federal government to pay for this plan.
Governor, we'll go to a question now from Julie Rovner of National Public Radio.
Governor, while Republicans are criticizing plans from the right, there are critics on the left who are dismayed by the fact that only one Democratic presidential candidate, Dennis Kucinich, has proposed replacing the U.S. health care system with a national health insurance system. Many Americans, as you noted, are happily enrolled in Medicare, which is a government-financed program that features distinctly lower administrative costs than private insurance plans. Why aren't you proposing a single-payer system, or as some refer to it, Medicare for all?
Well, because first, I believe that every American should have a choice. And there are a lot of Americans that may be on a health care plan. They're satisfied with it, and they shouldn't be forced to go into another system. Secondly, I do worry about a government-run plan where there's tremendous bureaucracy. I'd like to fully finance Medicare. I want to make it more efficient. But I don't know if I want to make it a program that runs the healthcare system in the United States. Third, I would say that what we need mostly is a shared responsibility where there is a role for the private sector, a diminished role in that what we're doing is first of all, before we fund Medicare for every American, we cover every American, the first responsibility should be, how can we fix an inefficient system? And we spend $2.2 trillion on healthcare in this country, yet one-third of that money goes into administration, bureaucracy, lack of electronic records. The first step we have to do, in my judgment, is eliminate the fact that one-third doesn't go into direct care. So what we need to do is have more preventive efforts, more preventive accountability, modernize electronic filing records, put cost controls on the insurance industry. As I've said, 85% has to go of their premiums has to go into direct care. That is a strong mandate to the private sector. But at this stage, I'm not ready to say that we should have Medicare for all, although as more individuals become frustrated with HMOs and insurance companies, public support for that is going to grow. But first, I believe, get a better bang for the buck with one-third of the system before you try something totally new.
Governor, if I could follow up, what do you say to the members of your party who say that there's no room for profit in medical care, that people oughtn't be making a profit off the backs of sick people?
Well, I share that sentiment, and I'm not advocating that the present system today is sound. It isn't. When you have those huge disparities in health care costs and in coverage, in quality of care, what my plan does is, first of all, it builds on the existing system. Secondly, it doesn't create any new bureaucracies. Third, it doesn't tax anyone. Fourth, it tries to improve on existing models, but then by expanding coverage, by lowering costs and improving quality with the steps that I outlined, let everybody participate in the congressional plan, small businesses and individuals, lower Medicare to 55, have that Heroes Health Card, expand SCHIP coverage for poor people and low-income citizens and Medicaid, and also then emphasize prevention dramatically. Have everybody have a shared responsibility. I believe that is far better and is more achievable in terms of getting it passed through the Congress. You couldn't get a Medicare for All plan passed in the Congress, and that is a key factor in any president wanting to have health care as a top priority, as I would do.
We'll go now to Rick Klein of ABC News.
Governor, you've said that your health care plan would cost an estimated $104 to $110 billion a year, but you've suggested its cost could be offset by a roughly equal amount of savings from improvements in quality of care and efficiency. Are you suggesting that health reform and expansions of coverage, like you're talking about, would essentially pay for itself?
What I've done is I've outlined how we save money. And basically what I've said is $55 billion in preventative services that we don't have today. The RAND Corporation says $22 billion that we would save from electronic filing records that we would create. I've also said you eliminate some of the health insurance high-risk deductible pools that exist that I think just operate mainly for wealthy people. Those are the savings that I've outlined, but look, how are we going to pay for this? That's a key question, and I am very specific about how we pay for it. I mean, besides the fact that I would get rid of the 2% Bush tax cuts for the wealthiest, and I would shift a large part of the funds in the Iraq war, $500 billion, I know that's discretionary spending, into the budget, I would also lower costs by reducing prescription drug prices when they negotiate with Medicare. I would also find $73 billion in corporate welfare that exists in the tax system, and I would shift a lot of those funds to the budget and to health care. I'd eliminate congressional earmarks, which I believe are a large drain on the budget. I would also, as a matter of fact, focus on lowering costs. When you're reducing insurance costs and saying 85% of your premiums have to go into direct care, that is another amount of substantial savings that don't exist today. I'm also the only candidate, by the way, if you want to catch me in contradiction, that advocates a constitutional amendment to balance the budget over 6 years. I have to do it as a governor. I believe in the line item veto, too. But at the same time, I think it's important that we recognize that health care is a top domestic priority in our country, and we must address it. It's a human right. And today, it's probably the issue that affects most voters in any state, no matter where you go. Outside of the Iraq war, those two are about the same.
Governor, to follow up again on the cost of your plan, you're talking about $104 to $110 billion a year. It sounds very similar to the numbers that the other major Democratic candidates are talking about for their health care plans. So I'm curious how you got your numbers, and essentially, did someone cheat off someone else's homework here?
Well, why don't you check and see who had the first health care plan? I think I was second to John Edwards. But, you know, my plan has been costed out by experts all over Washington, D.C. and all around the country. And, you know, I didn't look at anyone's health plans. I was a little worried that you were to ask me about the specifics of some of the other candidate plans. I have enough problems developing my own before I know what the other candidates are doing. But I do believe I have specifically costed out. I think another area that differs from the other candidates that is cost saving is I get rid of the $2 billion in some of the health insurance deductibles for upper income people that exist today.
Governor, you mentioned the Health Solutions New Mexico plan in your opening statement. Of course, you helped to shape that in your state. Many aspects of this plan bear a resemblance to the reforms that Massachusetts put in place, although relative to the size of the population, of course, New Mexico has many more uninsured than Massachusetts does. The New Mexico plan, like the Massachusetts plan, is going to depend in part on federal matching dollars for the state Children's Health Insurance Program and Medicaid and other financing sources that have been discussed. In your case in New Mexico, a hike in taxes on health insurance premiums. Doesn't that make the state's plan rather precarious and perhaps not likely to be achievable anytime soon?
Well, no. First of all, my state's in good financial condition. And if you look at our record, we've insured, since I came into office, 22,000 more individuals. Plus, I have dramatically increased Medicaid spending because my state's in good financial condition, obviously because of the good economic stewardship of the governor. You're supposed to laugh. My point is that, you know, our state is in healthy economic condition. We've had a surplus, and I have been able to not deal with all the shortfalls that come from Medicaid. But obviously, if I'm president, health care priority, spending for Medicaid, states can't do it alone. In fact, what I have also advocated is a stronger division of responsibility. The federal government do more when it comes to acute care. The states do more when it comes to children, working families. In fact, I have openly stated that I'd like to see Medicare, a broader separation with the dual eligibles, the 6 million dual eligibles, where the federal government takes over more of the seniors and disabled programs, while Medicaid does more for SCHIP, for children, and for working families, a broader division of responsibility, so you don't have all these waivers that we all have to fight to get approved in the federal government. If we had clear divisions of responsibility, I believe you would achieve substantially better coordination in our healthcare system.
Just to follow up, that swap that you mentioned, whereby the federal government would take over the responsibilities for the elderly and disabled in Medicaid, and the states would stay with the families and kids, that's been talked about for a long time, several decades, as you know. Why would that be more achievable now when it's been really stuck as a matter of debate for quite some time?
Well, mainly because I would push for it and I would make it happen. I know how to get the support of governors. You have to get them behind this. Now, I'm not suggesting, for instance, when the states take over Medicaid, that they take over the funding for Medicaid. But I think it's a sensible division of responsibility that is part of my plan. Obviously, you have to negotiate it with the Congress. You have to negotiate it with all stakeholders. But, you know, I think what's happened, Susan, did you ask that?
Yes, that was my question, Governor. Susan.
Okay, no, I just didn't see. I just wanted to refer to you by name. You know, there's a pessimism in Washington from years of failed leadership on health care. The last health care reform we had was when I was in the Congress in the Clinton years, and no one has even tried. So there's all this ingrained pessimism. You can't do this. You can't separate. You can't make quality care more durable. You can't lower costs. You can't increase coverage. It's the pessimism of a system that exists because a president and the Congress have a dysfunctional relationship. And you have a huge role of the special interests that basically for years have tried to block significant reform. I would change that by governing in a bipartisan way, by involving all stakeholders, by creating a citizens' movement to make this a viable plan that is achievable within the first term of my administration.
Well, I apologize if we come across as the negative nabobs of negativism or nattering nabobs of negativism, as I guess the phrase once was.
That was Spiro Agnew. I'm old enough to remember him.
I'm afraid I'm as well. We'll go to Lori McGinley now, the Wall Street Journal.
Governor, as you mentioned, you've proposed that people aged 55 to 64 be allowed to buy into Medicare. How exactly would that work? Would these people be responsible for the entire premiums, or would they be subsidized by the government?
Well, this would be a full buy-in, but so people would pay their fair share. Obviously, those that are in lower income individuals, there would be subsidies for them, a sliding scale subsidy. But basically, getting those 64 to 55 to buy into Medicare would be not creating a new bureaucracy. You're already using the Medicare bureaucracy, and it's estimated by those individuals buying into the Medicare plan and not buying into private markets, is going to be about 25% less, 25% less. The approximate cost being about $600. That's an estimate that I got, which my staff is very unhappy that I'm giving it to you. But it is a specificity of my plan that I believe just reducing it to 55 also helps in saving enormous amounts of preventive services. If those individuals 55 and over can get access to Medicare coverage, they can get cancer screenings earlier. I mean, the detection, for instance, of cervical cancer that doesn't exist, and women at that age are starting to have more of those issues and those problems. And you're able to have so many more screenings and preventive services at that age that I believe it'll improve the overall quality of Americans getting health care by lowering it to 55.
Governor, as a follow-up, as I'm sure you realize, a Medicare buy-in of this sort could pose some big risks. For example, if only the sickest people enrolled, then costs in the whole program could go up dramatically, and that could make it more expensive for everyone. And, of course, as you mentioned, some people might be tempted to drop their private insurance, and that could undermine the private market. Are you concerned about these kinds of risks, and what would you do to mitigate them?
You mean that it'll cost more? Or because I believe that this will make Americans healthier. They at 55 they'll have more access to preventive care, to sound screenings, to prevention strategies, and I think in the end that saves money. Maybe some of the private sector entities that used to handle these insurance will suffer a bit, but I think they're going to make it okay. Maybe I didn't understand your question.
Governor, it's really a question about adverse selection. You mentioned $600. I gather that was $600 a month, a plan that was as comprehensive as Medicare that would cost $600 a month would be a magnet for all kinds of people who are having trouble getting coverage in the private market. So essentially you just have a whole lot of sick, probably frail people who couldn't get coverage otherwise flocking to the Medicare program and driving up the costs.
Yeah, well, what's wrong with that? I mean, here, you know, there's 14 million human beings that are excluded because of pre-existing condition or because they can't get or they have minimal coverage. They get coverage for their health but not for the ailment that they come into. I mean, that is going to cost more, but I think it's the right thing to do if we are going to have universal coverage.
We'll go to a question now from Julie Rovner of NPR.
Governor, I have a related question. Many experts, including the Congressional Budget Office just last week, say that America is already facing a fiscal train wreck because of the soaring costs of Medicare and Medicaid. How will you pay for these programs, which are already projected to be in long-term deficit?
Okay, well, you didn't hear my... You didn't hear my plan to reduce the debt. But, I mean, I'll go through it.
Well, this is very long term. This is over the next 40, 50, 60 years.
You're just talking about health care?
Yes, just talking about health care.
Or you're talking about the whole budget?
No, we're talking about the long term costs of Medicare and Medicaid, which are threatening to swamp the rest of the budget over the next, as the baby boomers retire.
Well, I mentioned one. We need to find a way to get every American covered. I mean, this is how we're going to lower Medicare costs. And I think it's the trustees that said in 2019 we face the serious shortfall. In other words, if we cover everybody and we go down to 55, that is a mitigating cost. Secondly, I mentioned the inefficiency of the paper record system. This is a known fact that we don't have those reporting requirements, those electronic records that would save money. Third, I mentioned it's $75 million to manage coordinated chronic diseases. You know, that's 75% of healthcare costs goes into that. If you have preventative efforts, if you're a diabetic, here's an example. A nutritionist, you won't pay, Medicare won't pay for you to see your nutritionist. your podiatrist, your primary care doctor all the same day. We need to change that. There's another program called Independence at Home that deals with home care that I have proposed, where you can get, instead of having to go to a hospital and see 13 specialists, you have a system where at home, through technology, you can get treatment. And, you know, a nurse will come to your home. It's a more sophisticated way to deal with health care. You know, personal responsibility. I mentioned having a president who will get on the bully pulpit and said we all have to get health care. And that means smoking bans. That means giving incentives to companies to let their employees work out. This means dealing with diabetes. 33% of health care, of Medicare, is diabetes. 33%. We have no prevention strategies to deal with that. We have no outreach to deal with that. Obesity with kids. So this is why what I did in my state, I try to do nationally. Get rid of junk food in schools. Get stronger nutritional requirements. Fruits and vegetables. Find ways to have healthy breakfasts for every child at every school. Mandatory physical education.
Governor,
if
I can follow up, many of your colleagues have also suggested these things, and most experts say they would make only the smallest of dents in the long-term health care costs. At some point, won't Americans have to face the specter of some sort of health care rationing, either waiting longer for new technology or waiting longer for elective care, or, as Oregon has done, paying for more effective care and not paying for less effective care? Would you be prepared as president to tell the American people that when it comes to health care, they can't have everything they want?
Well, right now they have nothing. I mean, look at the many people left out of the system. No, I wouldn't tell them that. I try to fix the problem. I'm optimistic about trying to fix the problem. Healthcare rationing, more than exists today. I just believe there's... just look at this statistic that I keep going back to, and I'll stop. One-third of what we pay for healthcare, $2.2 trillion, that's almost 20% of our GDP, doesn't go into direct care. It's overhead of administration and bureaucracy and HMOs and insurance companies and no electronic records. I mean, we have to fix that first, and that's going to take mandates. That's going to take mandates like the 85% on insurance companies. It's going to mean negotiate prices, lowering Medicare. It's going to mean prevention strategies that... I'm not talking about mandates, but it's got to be a bully pulpit of a president. It's going to take incentives. I don't mind giving the private sector an incentive if they make their employees healthier. So, no, I'm not. I think that really is a pessimistic question.
Governor, we'll move to Rick Klein of ABC News.
Governor, you're of Hispanic heritage, and many of the nation's estimated 12 million undocumented immigrants are of Hispanic origin as well. But you propose no specific plan for paying for health care for the undocumented immigrants who are in the country. How would you propose to have them access the health care system?
Well, first, I would have a plan for Americans. We have to do that first. Now, secondly, I would push for a very strong, comprehensive immigration act. And I think I could get it done because of my background and heritage and the fact that I'm border governor and I have to deal with these problems every day. It would be increasing security at the border. It would be a better effort with Mexico to provide jobs on both sides of the border. It would involve employer sanctions. It would involve a legalization plan. I think that's a comprehensive plan. But today, for legal immigrants, they would have to buy the coverage under my plan. For undocumented workers, we're in a way already paying for a large part of their care because of the law that says anybody that gets emergency care needs to be treated. But I would first find a way to cover all Americans, and then when these individuals are legalized, they would have to pay into the system too. That would be my plan.
Governor, virtually everyone agrees that the emergency room care, the way that people like this are getting care now, is the least efficient. It's the most expensive. You go in there for a toothache or a hangnail, and it's an incredibly expensive proposition. Is your answer to these undocumented immigrants just wait till there's reform, or is there anything that you can do? You're talking about optimism today. Is there anything that you can do in the medium term to find a way to provide coverage to these people?
Well, no, I don't think you can. They already, for instance, in my state, and many states, they can go to a hospital and generally get care. I would not deny that. But clearly, we have to have a comprehensive plan that covers the American people first. Children, I believe, regardless of who they are the top priority, but as you know, undocumented workers that have children born in America, they're automatically American citizens, and I believe very strongly that the coverage should be there for them. But I would first want to develop a comprehensive plan for the American people, pass comprehensive immigration, which I think is doable, and have a legalized system where by paying in, their employers paying in, undocumented immigrants can be covered too.
Governor, you've proposed abolishing all federal tax breaks, for health savings accounts. And this is the opposite, as you said, from what President Bush has proposed and from what most Republican candidates for president propose, which is to expand HSAs. So why should HSAs be abolished when roughly 5 million Americans now have them and when at least some of the evidence appears to suggest that people do make more cost-effective purchasing decisions about health care when they are in HSAs?
Well, let me give you an example. Maternity care, that's the number one reason that women will need, most women will need hospital care. But under high-risk health plans, women end up spending thousands more of pocket for their care. Here's why I don't like it. You know, deductibles, first of all, can be up to about $10,000 for family. These are a step backward, in my judgment, from affordable health care that all Americans deserve. You know, I believe that this is a tax incentive for upper income people, and there should be equity in the system. You know, I think a lot of health experts think that these plans are a waste of money. They put working families at risk. You know, most families can't afford to pay this very out of pocket cost that these plans follow. You know, up to $100,000, up to $10,000 per year in some cases. So, you know, they're not catching on as quickly as the president thought they would. They're complicated. They put people at greater financial risk. And it's a matter of inequity. And I believe, I think I'm the only candidate that has said I'd get rid of them. I would.
What about the idea, though, that when people do have to spend some of their dollars right out of pocket, they do a better job of shopping around than they do when, for example, it's 100% covered by some third party? Isn't there some element of wisdom in an approach like that, no matter where you set the deductible?
Yeah, I concede that. I do concede that. But nonetheless, the cost is so prohibitive, and it's basically, I believe, it's like a tax cut for the 2% of the wealthiest Americans. I mean, most families are not going to be able to afford it, and why should the health insurance company benefit from this basic inequity? Look, Susan, you're positing something that probably gives people more options. But if you cover individuals, if you have a plan for the underinsured, for the uninsured, for eliminating the pre-existing condition, you know, you're not going to have these kind of problems.
We'll go to a question now from Lori McGinley.
Governor, as you know, we have great disparities in this country, both in terms of health care and in health. And I'd like to ask you first about health disparities. It's clear, for example, that Hispanics are much more likely to be affected than other ethnic populations by conditions like diabetes. You've talked a bit about this and about the problem of diabetes. Could you tell us a bit more about what you would do to improve the health of these and other Americans who are less healthy and have shorter life expectancies?
Well, you know, I think it's pretty outrageous in this country that race still plays a major role in how healthy people are. And if you look at the statistics involving Native Americans, African Americans, and others, they're most likely to have chronic diseases. I can just tick off all of them, heart disease, diabetes. But here's the biggest health disparity that I believe involves the next challenge for the next president. Black and Hispanic kids account for 80% of all pediatric AIDS cases, 80%. And what also exists is another statistic, 50% of new AIDS cases today are African American, 50, 19% are Latinos. So we need a national strategy that involves not just finding more minority doctors, putting them in inner cities and rural areas, but also focusing more attention of preventive services of individuals that have this affliction. I think you have to recruit more minorities in the health professions and healthcare research. Minorities are 30% of the population, but only 10% of health professions. You got to have healthier lifestyles and outreach and education in minority communities. They don't get this outreach in education. Let me just conclude with one area that I know something about: Native Americans. They represent about 11% of my state, and they're a huge, huge problem today, mainly because the federal government, through its federal trust responsibility, is not fulfilling its trust responsibility. The shortfalls in funding, in education, in health care. I had to pass in my state an Indian Health Services Act because of the failure of the federal government to provide enough funds, not just for research and treatment, but for basic health care in the Indian Health Service. Look at how it's funded. It's way buried in the bureaucracy over HHS. And one of the steps that I would take as president, I would put Indian issues in a sub-cabinet level department where you put health care and the trust issues and water and interior related issues and give it a higher priority in the federal government. But let me conclude with AIDS. I just believe there's no more compelling health disparity strategy that we need today than an effort to deal with outreach on education on AIDS with African American and Hispanic populations. And it means looking at needle exchanges, further use of condoms. It means more research. It means bolder plans than we have today.
And to Julie Robner of NPR.
Governor, a new survey just out today shows that out-of-pocket costs for caring for an aging spouse or parent averages about $5,500 a year. With an aging population and increasing amount of chronic disease, as you've mentioned, these burdens are likely to grow. Yet you have proposed nothing specific on long-term care. As president, what would you do about this growing problem?
Well, no, but I did. I mentioned this independence at home. That basically it's an incentive to keep people at home, to keep them healthier at home. You know, for instance, 13 different physicians would be replaced by this. For instance, that's the average number of health care providers that seniors have to have. And the independence at home concept would provide for one of these to happen.
But, of course, these are people at home that these people are spending $5,500 a year taking care of. That's what the study out today says. It's caring
that's
for
right. Now, I understand. But I'm the only candidate that has provided, and this is mainly aimed at women, for a caregiver tax credit. As you know, a lot of women, when they are providing for or taking care of a sick parent or birth of a child, they get out of the work cycle and they lose their Social Security benefits. I'm the only candidate with a plan with a caregiver tax credit to provide for those individuals, mainly women, that are taking care of sick parents at home with a caregiver tax credit. Plus, as I mentioned, this independence at home program, I think, would save about $13 to $16 billion annually by basically reducing emergency home visits and visits to the hospital. So it's another form of preventive care.
And
by the way, my state received an award for having, I think, the third best home care in the country. Again, excellent stewardship by the governor.
And to Rick Klein of ABC.
Governor, you've proposed expanding Medicaid and SCHIP at the federal level, and you expanded children's coverage under that stewardship you referred to in New Mexico. But efforts to expand SCHIP in Congress now appear to be running aground, as lawmakers, as you know, so far have failed to override President Bush's veto of the reauthorization legislation. Why do you think that you would succeed where the president and lawmakers have so far failed in expanding these programs?
I got 40% of the Republican vote in my state. I am able to work both sides. You have to have independents and Republicans. I have credibility with the private sector. You know, in New Mexico, when I cut taxes, when I improved education, it was coalitions with the private sector, with Republicans, to make these two objectives achievable. I can do that as president. I'm a diplomat. I can bring people together. I've done that in rescuing hostages, bringing countries together, building bipartisan support, governing. You know, you got to have experience to be able to change this country. What I'm saying is that with SCHIP, look, you know, this is also a bit political, because here, if you can build bipartisan consensus, you can basically say that you're increasing health care to children, 6 million, from 6 million to 10 million. And, you know, if there are those in the upper brackets that are benefiting, and maybe there's some unreasonable to it, maybe you can work a compromise. But today, the efforts of both sides to try to get political benefit out of the fact that there's this tremendous dysfunctional relationship is just not helping children. I believe I could build a coalition together, but I do fault the president. All of a sudden, you know, here's a president who had not vetoed one single bill in a Republican Congress. Now he's finding religion. Now he's a budget balancer, and he's vetoing water projects, infrastructure projects. That one was overridden. And now this children's program, which I believe is a good program. The SCHIP program is good. It works. It helps a lot of kids that have parents that don't have enough insurance to be able to be covered. And I think that's the first responsibility in any healthcare system. Insure kids under 5, under 12. We were able to do that in my state.
Governor, as I said earlier, we made each candidate, including you, aware of our closing question, which is this. As president, where would health care stand on your list of priorities? And please be as specific as possible in telling us when you would proceed with health reform if elected.
All right. Well, health care. This will be my top domestic priority to get through the Congress, the top. I will be engaged dramatically. I will be engaged in passing the bill. I'm going to bring all Americans into the process, talk about it in the State of the Union. Yes, it's going to take Republicans. I'm going to build coalitions that today may not be normal coalitions. We have to involve citizens who desperately want something done. This health plan needs to be about the average human being, not the average special interest. Here's my timeline for implementation. We're going to get the bill passed in the first year, and realistically, it's going to take several more years to implement. This will include giving Americans more choices of affordable coverage and laying the groundwork for reducing costs through health information technology, prevention, and chronic disease management. By the end of my second year, choices for quality coverage will be available to all Americans. By the end of my first term, every American will be required to obtain coverage. Once we have made truly affordable choices available, my plan would provide affordable, guaranteed coverage for all Americans by 2012. Now, no matter how good the plan looks on paper, the real test is going to be how can we bring all the stakeholders to the table to build support and help implement the plan. As I said, I've been a governor, an ambassador, a cabinet secretary. I've had real-world experiences needed to bring people together to solve tough problems that Americans are facing every day. You know, every day today, Americans are dying, literally, because they lack access to health care coverage. I think it's something like 4,000 a day. Others are facing financial catastrophe. Even people who paid their premiums and thought they were protected. People are actually today holding fundraisers to pay their medical bills. Business can't compete. We can't afford to wait any longer for the good of the country, for the sake of our people. We have to act now, and now is the time. So thank you very much, and I will close by saying you guys need to be more optimistic. There's not a very can-do spirit with you, and that's what we need. That's because you guys have spent too much time in New York and Washington, and I haven't.
Well, Governor, thank you. Not to dwell on this pessimism stuff too much, but I just want to ask you one quick follow-up. We haven't had a chance to ask you about the public health system and how prepared it is for emergencies, whether it's pandemic flu, whether it's, God forbid, another series of catastrophic hurricanes and so on. What in your health reform plan, what component of it would be for bolstering the public health care system?
Well, we have to take those steps because today, all you have to look at is Katrina, and you know, I have a very extensive plan to deal with global warming, which is a good cause for Katrina, but I think we have to be better prepared for emergencies, pandemic diseases, not just nationally but internationally, anthrax, homeland security. We're just not prepared. Vaccines. And by the way, I'm very personally interested in autism, and I can flatly say that through my extensive medical research as a physician, which I'm not, that vaccines are not causing autism. But we don't have any data on what's causing it, but it's all I can tell you is one out of 150 kids in this country, and it's certain toxins that are out there. I don't know if it's a pandemic disease, but there are a lot of questions that we haven't answered, and it's going to take more research commitments. It's going to take more America becoming a land where we try to defeat these diseases, not just ease the pain, which is what we do today.
Well, thank you very much, Governor Richardson, and thanks to my colleagues, Lori McGinley of the Wall Street Journal, Julie Rovner of National Public Radio, and Rick Klein of ABC News. This concludes our presidential forum on health care with Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico, Democratic candidate for president. We'll be back here again soon at the Kaiser Family Foundation in Washington, D.C. for our next presidential health forum. For the schedule on that, please consult www.health08.org. I'm Susan Denser. Thank you and good day.
This program was made possible by the generous support of the Kauffman Foundation and the California Endowment.